With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast and Videocast. Of course, we are back here after a long, long absence since the last pay-per-view. I'm Jake Litarski, joined by John Littering. If you're out there on Twitter, give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can give me a follow at RotoJake. Today, we're going to be making our biggest our picks for the biggest fights at UFC 266, Volkanovski Ortega. John, it's been a while since we last talked. I don't know how best to break the ice, but we've had a bunch of fight night cards looking at Anthony Smith, Derek Brunson, Giga Chikadze, all pretty impressive. Anybody really stand out to you?
I mean, I'll go with Anthony Smith because, I mean, that was the most recent one last week. He looked good. I think we're at the point where it's pretty clear he's, you know, he might not be on the level as like the same top light heavyweights on the roster, but man, he's not that far off. And considering how many fights that guy's had and how many wars he's been over the years, he's a threat in there, man. It takes an army to get him out, and he's pretty good everywhere. His power is good. And I mean, if you're a young guy, like, I don't know, Span didn't look particularly good, but you know, Anthony Smith's not going to beat himself. You're going to have to go in and get him out of there. And, you know, Span couldn't do it.
Yeah, and a lot of people have been talking about his jiu-jitsu, saying it's crazy to roll with him in the gym. Like, it's definitely – he's sneaking a couple submission wins. You know, he got Devin Clark, Ryan Span. Like you said, that's how he got Gustafsson. That's how he got Volkan Ozdemir. All rear naked the triangle with Devin Clark. Like, the guy is a threat. He's an absolute legit threat on the mat here. Do I think he's going to go out there and roll over – you know, the Blachowicz Teixeira winner? Probably not. He's already got that knockout loss to Glover Teixeira, and he wasn't particularly impressive, but going to be tough to deny him a title shot. Maybe give him Jiří Procházka. See what happens there.
I think he asked for Rakic. I mean, I'd watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, he lost the first time, but I mean, the thing with Anthony Smith is he's been in so many fights that there's nothing in there that he hasn't seen. So like once in a while you got like a young fighter or an inexperienced fighter who just doesn't know how to handle a certain situation. There's like literally nothing in the sport that Anthony Smith hasn't seen. So if you're counting on him, you know, hoping he makes a mistake to capitalize, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to go in and beat him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Here. So a couple things, housekeeping things I want to get through before we jump right into the fights. Of course, sports betting section for sports books live on RotoWire. We only got really main event props, but by the time we get later in the week, it can sort by things like first round knockout, likelihood of winning by knockout. So all these DFS helpful things. And you can also kind of shop around sports books if you're in one of those states that is wised up and legalized sports betting here, of course. And then one more thing, programming announcement. Fight IQ is back on Friday at 8 Eastern on this very channel here. If you're here, thank you for joining us on the RotoWire MMA YouTube channel. We're trying to build that up from, kind of from the bottom up here, as you know, we sent the main channel to focus largely on NFL stuff. So we're going to talk about UFC 266 today, hopefully get some DFS, maybe some bets. You know, only DraftKings salaries are out right now, so that's the focus here, and let's get to it. Main event, featherweight championship. We have the, you know, technically the finale of season 29 of The Ultimate Fighter was a few weeks back when, you know, they crowned The Ultimate Fighter. But now we're going to have the coaches finally go at it here. Alexander Volkanovski, Brian Ortega, the champion. Volkanovski is 8,600 on DraftKings, 7,600 for Ortega. Vegas odds reflect that as well. Minus 165 for Volkanovski. Comeback on Ortega is plus 145. Odds to finish, plus 100. Basically a pick 'em here. What are your first thoughts on this fight, John?
I mean, I guess my first thought was that it's pretty clear, I think, that Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway are the two best featherweights in the world today. You know, I don't really think at this point there's really much argument about that. I also think that they just fought twice in a row, and there's no way the UFC could go back to it a third straight time. So, you know, if you're subscribing to that theory, I don't really have a problem with Ortega getting the shot.
I thought Holloway won the second fight for whatever that's worth. A lot of people could go back for the third time, but I don't know. Maybe that was just me, you know, tilting from my drafting lineups a little too much. You know, I'm going to rewatch that a few more times.
They'll get there. I mean, I'd be shocked if they don't fight again at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, Alexander Volkanovski is, I mean, of course, we know by now, totally legitimate. He lost his third pro fight in May of 2013. So we're on, you know, 8+ years now, and he hasn't lost since. He's 9-0 in the UFC, and he's one of those guys who, like, really was just roster death when he arrived, and he's now the UFC featherweight champion. His power is probably the best in the division in terms of, like, just sheer knockout power. You know, Holloway might have him in volume and technical skill and that kind of stuff, but I think in terms of sheer power, he's probably the top guy in the division. Featherweight's loaded, and Volkanovski definitely has a chance to hold the belt for a long period of time. This is an interesting fight because it's Brian Ortega's second shot at UFC gold. He fought Holloway, who was champion then, back in December 2018, and he was hammered. He was absolutely
not even close. Whenever I think of that fight, I think of that that little video of it's in the fourth round, or because they stop it at the end, where Holloway's toying with him and he puts Ortega's hand up like he's showing him how to defend himself, and then he stops and he steps back and 1-2s.
It was like bad.
So lopsided. One of the most significant, one of the best DFS performances in featherweight history. That's for sure. Yeah.
And it's funny because, I mean, look, that's not Brian Ortega's game. Brian Ortega is a ground mat specialist. You know, he can submit any man in the world. And there's no doubt that a prolonged striking battle plays into the hands of Volkanovski. That being said, I was really, really impressed with what we saw from Brian Ortega last October, his most recent fight. So we're going on almost a year, against the Korean Zombie. Not only did he beat the Zombie, crushed him in what was essentially a 25-minute kickboxing match. He hammered him. And, you know, that's not enough for me to ultimately pick him over Volkanovski, but it gives me hope that this fight's going to be closer than I would have thought it would have been at this time last year. Like, if you told me a year ago these two were going to fight, I would tell you Volkanovski would just hammer Ortega. His performance against the Korean Zombie definitely gave me more hope that this will be a competitive fight. You know, in many ways, like, the Ortega story is kind of like Henry Cejudo, where Cejudo's case it was wrestling. In Ortega's case, it's his ground, you know, BG.
It's his guillotine.
Pretty much, yeah. But, like, we always said that if Henry Cejudo even got, like, his striking to, like, even average, he'd be a UFC champion. He did, and he was a two-division UFC champion. It's kind of similar to Ortega. Like, his striking is certainly, you know, much better than it was even a couple of years ago. And he's so damn good on the mat that he has a legitimate chance to win a UFC title based on his ground game. Like, if his striking can just hold up, he has a real shot. The difference is, you know, Volkanovski, as good as the Zombie is, you know, there's a gap. And Ortega has a history of being a slow starter. He's won a bunch of fights early in his UFC career late, and that's not going to work against a guy like Volkanovski, who tends to be really aggressive. Ortega's going to have to come out ready to fight. You know, he can't fall behind on the scorecards because he's not going to be able to generate a ton of offense in a short period of time. You know, I think he's a live underdog. As far as, like, the Vegas odds and the salaries, just looking at it, I mean, everything seems about right, you know, to me, nothing crazy. I thought maybe Volkanovski would be a little, you know, maybe more like 185 or 190 as opposed to 165. But, I, you know, I guess that's about right. I still think in the end, I think the ultimate result is just going to be a third fight between Volkanovski and Holloway. But I think this will be a good fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, looking at this card, like, my initial first look reaction was there are a ton of big, heavy favorites on here. We'll talk about Shevchenko in a second. There are a couple of other big favorites, and I'm really having a tough time picking dogs. So if you have any chance, if you think Ortega has any chance, or, you know, if it's closer to 50-50, then, you know, maybe he's the guy that you use for salary relief in your lineup. And there is some GPP potential there because he can always, you know, I mentioned the guillotine, right? I don't think Volkanovski will really shoot for too many takedowns here. You never know, but he's got to be damn careful on that entry because that's where Ortega gets his come from behind wins in these fights. Like you said, he starts slow and then somebody, you look at his fight log, someone tries to shoot a takedown, he grabs you by the neck. He's got one of the tightest, best guillotines, you know, in the game that I can remember in recent memories, and he submits you, and that happens, and that would be a good GPP score in that situation. But really, when we bring this all full circle, I can't really advocate picking Ortega in this fight. I think Volkanovski's better pretty much all around. And the other question you have to ask yourself is, in the zombie fight, is this the zombie starting to regress a little bit at the age of 34? Now, he did just come off a unanimous decision win. He rebounded against Dan Ige, and 50K Ige is no joke at all. Before that, you know, he knocked out Frankie Edgar, which it seems like everyone's doing these days. So I'm not quite ready to offer this quite yet, but no, I think this is Volkanovski. I'm gonna bring this full circle. I think John got froze out here, so I'm gonna have him log out and log back in. So he should do that. Yep, and then we're gonna add him back on in just a second here. So you get my mug for a second. Sorry about the technical difficulties that might happen once or twice a show. Once he's good, I'll go. But anyway, yeah, my Volkanovski analysis is pretty similar to John's overall. I mean, he's a better all-around fighter in most aspects of the game here. You know, he's got a couple inches in reach on him. That's definitely going to help. He's got a big volume edge, so I think he can score pretty well in a decision. And there's a whole lot to like here with Volkanovski, and I'm gonna stick with him. We're going to be similar probably on a lot of these picks, and we definitely want to get in here. So I'm going to see if I can get John back here. Boom, here he is. All right, that was a too much of an extreme close up for me, John. So I'm glad we split back here.
There we go,
and we're back here. So, but yeah, no, I was making a lot of the same points as you with Volkanovski. He's a good DraftKings scorer, and you know the big thing with Ortega is you know AJ used to write for us, and when he was doing betting analysis, he would always say that you can't get married to one particular outcome in a fight because then you open yourself out to so many different ways if that path doesn't go as promised. Then Ortega's path to victory probably is to grab that guillotine on a late round entry, and I trust Volkanovski will have, you know, better fight IQ and be aware and know that that's coming, but I can't get married to that one outcome. You know, we have some exposure. You know, if you're making, say, 20 lineups, you know, you throw Ortega in one or two because you have to. The dogs on this card are not great. We'll move to some of the other underdogs later on, and there's some underdogs, you know, in the low 7,000s, upper 6,000s that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. So
we're about to get to one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you have some exposure to Ortega. Sure. Could he be a little live? Should he grab that submission? I wouldn't be shocked if that happened by any means, but I think if you know, in a one-to-one straight up, the pick has to be Volkanovski.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we always talk about it all the time. It's also harder to project a submission than it is a knockout. I mean, there's like a set of circumstances that has to go through in order to pull a submission, and a knockout could just be one punch, and, you know, it's more difficult.
Yeah, I hear you. So, like you said, we're going to get to the co-main, another title fight in a second. But first, it doesn't matter so much for our live viewers, but I'm going to quick pause if you're listening to this on a podcast. Going to quick pause for a sponsor or from a word from our sponsors here at Blue Wire.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And we are back here talking UFC 266. We're going to move on to the co-main event, another a title fight in the women's flyweight division. We've got one of the most dominant champions in the entire sport at flyweight, Valentina Shevchenko, taking on Lauren Murphy. Shevchenko is the highest priced fighter on DraftKings at 9,500. Murphy comeback is 6,700. Shevchenko is about a minus 1,500 favorite in the sports books. That should tell you everything. Now, listen, I'm looking at the DraftKings sportsbook, minus 1,500. The FanDuel Sportsbook has her minus 2,000. I think that's the biggest one. There's some of these not so legal ones that I'm not really allowed to say that are less, but I mean,
it's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. So again, if you're new to the show, just learning betting odds, you have to risk $2,000 to win $100 in that situation here. And John, yeah.
Unless you're like Floyd Mayweather, it's a terrible idea.
Exactly, exactly. If you got that huge bankroll, there's just not a lot to gain here. And John, I know you always say in your column, if it's over minus 1,000, the fight really has no business being made here. And are you in agreement, I take it, for this one?
Still hasn't changed. You know, even less than that, got it. Minus 700, minus 800 still probably shouldn't be happening. You know, this, this isn't going to sound particularly interesting. It's going to sound like every other one we do here. You know, this is a division that just, you know, has very little depth. And I think relative to whoever else is in her division or in his division, I think Valentina Shevchenko is probably the most dominant fighter in the sport today. You know, there's no one in the division that can remotely come close to touching her. Valentina last fought in April, she hammered Jessica Andrade. And I wrote up in my column, I think she's getting bored. Like I really do. Like she knows she's going to win these fights. She doesn't really have to. She's had a couple like so-so performances. Like, I want to say like the Liz Carmouche fight, like she didn't look like great, but
the Liz Carmouche fight is since she last fought Amanda Nunes, which was her last loss. The Carmouche fight was the only time she's been, well, one of two times she's been under 100 DraftKings points, and that was her lowest one, 74.3. So obviously you're not even getting 10x if you're priced at 9,500. No, and
74.3 is like not a horrible score. But yeah. for her, it's like not good enough.
I mean, at this price, the whole point of DraftKings, right, is you need 12x is generally the rule of thumb to get GPPs here. So, you know, you need her to get 114 points to really hit value at this. And she did it against Andrade. She did it against Maya. Didn't do it against I. Didn't do it against Joanna. Of course, did it against Priscilla Cachera, thanks to Mario Yamasaki's kind of incompetence there. He's no longer a ref.
Like, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe she didn't do it against I. Mm-hmm. Although that was like so lopsided immediately that like,
yeah.
I mean, this is what you're gonna get. Like your chances of Shevchenko paying off at 9,500. Essentially probably boils down to how much of a beating Lauren Murphy can take. Like that's like what it comes down to. Cause like if Valentina crushes her in 6 seconds, like you're not going to get you're going to get like, you know, an immediate win. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get all the, you're not going to rack up all those strike points and all that.
Gone in 60 second bonus. They're trying to fix that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I feel bad. Cause like Lauren Murphy is probably like the best of what is an extremely limited group of options. Mm-hmm. She's won 5 fights in a row. So like, at least you're not giving it like something we've talked about sometimes, like someone wins like one fight or they've never even fought in a division and they get a title shot. At least she's won 5 fights in a row. But I mean, like in there are like a couple split decisions from like Joanne Calderwood and Andrea Lee, who are probably the best ones Murphy has beaten.
Her five last decisions, 3 of them were split decisions, including the Calderwood fight recently in which she was outstruck 123 to 180.
Yeah, I thought she lost that fight, but I mean, that's a different story. She's turned 38 years of age this past July. And it's kind of Amanda Nunes traditionally has had a hard time drawing too, as if she's leading a card. And it's just no one can take these fights seriously. I mean, it's really, really hard. And it's just there's no other way. The UFC is spinning their wheels until Nunes and Shevchenko fight again. For both of them, not just Shevchenko fights, for Nunes fights. I mean, we'll talk about it when it happens. But I mean, Nunes is going to kill Juliana Peña.
Yeah, it's looking like December 12th for that one. And like, I mean, you know, they put the interim heavyweight as the main event over the Amanda Nunes. This was the last time we talked about this when the Nunes fight got called off. But they basically forced an interim heavyweight to not have Nunes headline a card. You know, and
I mean, as great as she is, no one can give her a competitive fight. And I mean, you know, if you don't have any challengers, you effectively don't have any interest. And this is a good card from top to bottom. Like, this is a good card. But I mean, there's at least 5 or 6 fights on the undercard I'd rather watch than this fight. I mean, it's just how it is. It's not really a fight. It's just, and you know, sure, you get like a Ronda Rousey over Holly Holm over Ronda Rousey, you know, or Matt Serra over George St. Pierre. But I mean, these things happen like once every 10 years, you know, like that's why you're a -1500 and a -2000 favorite.
Exactly.
And you have to, if you make a bunch of lineups, you got to get a piece of Shevchenko somewhere because she's so much better than her opponent. Like, it wouldn't be the least bit surprising if Murphy lasted till the fourth round and ate 400 strikes or something insane. But as far as like a competitiveness for the actual, like, who's going to win and who's going to lose, it's not happening.
Yeah. So for survivor pools, for any kind of cash games, 50-50s, double ups, head to head contests, you definitely want to get Shevchenko there. The question then becomes, we've got a UFC 266 special. I believe it's $700,000 is the prize pool, $150,000 to first place. The question then becomes, will using Shevchenko be advantageous in these large prize pools where you need to differentiate yourself? Or do you pivot to other fighters that could score equally as well? Now, I don't want to go too far down the undercard here, but you know, you took look at another women's fight, a Manon Fiorro, who is who has just been railing through her competition lately. She sits at around 9,100, and you know, could you get the same thing? The odds won't say the same, but I think you could get the same DraftKings scoring, and that $400 is quite a bit on this card here. So as much as I love Shevchenko, I think she's by far a guarantee to win, the biggest guarantee to win on this card. You just never know. Sometimes you might need to get a little weirder if you're going to try to get that $150,000 top prize, which, I mean, what we saw the Showdown Millie Maker in NFL last night get split so many ways that I think the first place person won like $6,000. I don't know if I have that right or not, but, you know, in that ability. So she'll be popular. I would guess Shevchenko, if you're trying to project ownership, she'll be the highest rostered fighter on the entire slate. Will she win? Absolutely, but I can't tell you if she's going to do it at 4 minutes of round one or 4 minutes of round two. It really, like you said, depends on how much of a beating Murphy can take.
And I'll give Lauren Murphy this. I mean, look, she's not going to win, but she's tough. Like, she's never been knocked out in her career. Now, look, taking a beating from Valentina Shevchenko is not the same as taking a beating from Joanne Calderwood or Andrea Lee or anything like that, but she's tough. You know, people, I'm sure they'll show the clip of, I forget who she was fighting when Lauren Murphy lost like half her ear. Like, you know, she's tough, but this is just, and it's not Murphy personally. Like, this is what you get. You know, you have a division that doesn't have anybody.
Yeah,
and
definitely. I mean, anyone that listens to this, it's never personal. Like, I'm sure she's an awesome person. She seems really cool. I would love to have her on a show sometimes, but you just got to be honest and real here. It's just not happening on Saturday.
No, it's definitely not.
All right, so let's talk about one that is actually much, much closer in the sports books. This is one in which I have a real hard time trying to find a path in this fight, but it's looking like a pick 'em across just about every sports book. I think FanDuel gives Lawler a slight edge in theirs. Actually, FanDuel and DraftKings both give Lawler a slight edge, but you can find pick-ups in a lot of places here for sure. So let me give the rundown here. We'll get John back in just a moment here. Let's see here. What do I have? I've got... That always makes me lose my train of thought. Sorry. Nick Diaz, Robbie Lawler. This is a fight a lot of people are getting excited for. Absolutely. This is one, you know, that old school fight fans. You mentioned that, John, when we first started covering, Nick Diaz was one of the first guys that we had, period, here. And he has just been he's been around. I had a funny story queued up. You know, we make player IDs when guys are added to our database here. And I think Nick Diaz was 27 and Robbie Lawler was 28 in terms of the people added to our player pool. And, you know, as opposed to guys that are just debuting now, we're about to 2,200, something along those lines here. So anyway, let's get to the meat and potatoes here. Lawler, 8,300 on DraftKings. Diaz, 7,900. It's basically a pick 'em on the Vegas odds. Both of these guys are at minus 110 here. The odds to finish are plus 130. When you have a pick 'em, and of course you have the difference in salaries, you're going to have some line value. So you're going to have line value on Diaz. Nick Diaz is very, very popular, as is Robbie Lawler here. I might have to boot John from the stream one more time, see if we can get this going. There we go. And so anyway, here's the point I'm going to make on this fight. Nick Diaz having the line value and having, you know, the Diaz brothers are some of the most popular names, biggest draws in the entire sport of mixed martial arts. Diaz, if you're trying to project ownership in DFS, is going to be much, much higher owned than Robbie Lawler for that reason. So you could come to the other side and maybe think of Robbie Lawler as a leverage play, and that would be fair. You take the less popular fighter to try to gain on the field. That's a viable GPP strategy. You know, definitely DFS players have been doing this. You know, the pro players do this for ages, and maybe heighten up that exposure here with Lawler. But I have a real tough time thinking who's going to win this one. I want your take and how you arrived at your pick, John.
I have no idea. I can't remember writing up a fight where you have two guys who have combined for more than 80 pro fights. So they've both been around forever. I have no idea whatsoever what's going to happen in this fight. None. Like, I don't even know where to start. Nick Diaz has not fought since we started covering MMA at RotoWire.
Yeah, that's when you first went out of the stream. That's the story I was trying to tell. Yeah. Yeah,
January 31st, 2015 was the last time Nick Diaz fought. So we're on, going on.
Was that the fight where he was doing his laying down on the canvas thing because Anderson Silva wouldn't come after him? Or am I thinking of a different one? That could have been that one.
God, it's been so long. I don't even remember. Yeah. I mean, look, this is Nick Diaz is 38 years old. Just turned 38 early last month. I have no idea what's going to happen in this fight. I don't think anybody does. And
hence the pick 'em, you know,
it's a total, I mean, these two fought back in 2004, which was UFC 47. I mean, what are we at now? What is this?
266.
Yeah. It's been a while. Look, Lawler looks done. You know, I think we can kind of agree on that. He's just been so many wars over the years. I just don't think he has anything left, but I mean, he's fighting a guy who hasn't fought in 6.5 years. So I ultimately took Diaz. I can't believe I did that. And the literal lone reason I did it is that we know how tough both Diaz brothers are and how difficult they are to get out of there. So even if Robbie goes off on Diaz, I think Diaz will be able to hang around.
Yep.
I don't know if Diaz is going to be able to, I mean, it's been so long. I don't know if he's going to be able to generate enough offense to get Lawler out of there. But I know Lawler's vulnerable, and I know Diaz is tough. And, like, you toss that in with the, what, $400 you save in salary? Like, that's literally how I got to my pick. I have no idea. I truly can't remember ever writing up a fight where I have less idea what's going to happen. It's like, if you told me Lawler was going to come across and throw one haymaker, like, I wouldn't be totally shocked. I mean, I'd be shocked because of how tough Diaz is, but, like, and if you told me that Lawler is so fragile now that Diaz walked across the cage and just walked him down and finished him in 2 seconds, I wouldn't be surprised about that either. I have no idea what's going to happen here. Like,
yeah. Listen, I'm going to give it my best shot to try to make some sense out of this, but let's take this with a grain of salt because largely I'm with you, John. I can't say with any confidence, but here's kind of a path that how I'm arriving here. You have to decide if you're picking this fight, what the value of recent activity is of late. Now, Lawler has lost 4 fights in a row. Rafael Dos Anjos, solid opponent, no shame in that. Colby Covington, very solid opponent and current title contender. No shame in that at all. Ben Askren loss, looks terrible right now, especially after what Ben Askren's tried to do in the boxing ring here. But it was a bulldog choke and a very controversial stoppage here by Herb Dean. You know, he looked like Herb Dean defended it. You know, I commend him for defending it about, you know, I've seen fighters hurt and crank their neck that way. So he called the fight. And also, mind you, Lawler had him almost knocked out before Askren was able to recover there. And then, of course, you have a decision here loss to Neil Magny. Four losses in a row, and that makes me think of the old the Loki quote from Avengers Infinity War, where he's like, is failure experience? And then Loki says, no, experience is experience. So, you know, take with that what you will, because this whole time, you know, Lawler's been getting smoked. Well, I mean, of course, he had that nice little reign as champion there. That whole time, you know, Diaz has been on the sidelines unfairly, by the way. Nevada Athletic Commission spending him for 5 years and making him pay a six-figure fine is absolutely ludicrous for something which, by the way, marijuana that is legal in the state of Nevada. They just approved that. So, you know, just going to take a side there. Anyway, so where am I going with this? Yeah, you have to decide the value of experience. And then there's the MMA miles factor, right? Robbie Lawler had one of the best chins in the entire sport. I mean, since that UFC 47 loss where he was knocked out by Nate Diaz there, I believe that was in the second round. Yeah, he was knocked out by Nick Diaz in the second round in April 2nd of 2004. Since then, he's only been knocked out once, and that was by Tyron Woodley, who of course became champion and defended that. And, you know, he's had his whole deal since. I think the MMA miles on Robbie Lawler are too many. Go back and watch Lawler McDonald 2, one of the craziest ones. Obviously, we saw what he did to McDonald, basically ended his career. McDonald was never the same fighter after that, but he took plenty of licks of his own, and he's taken plenty of licks since then. So this might be a case. Now, maybe I'm trying to talk myself too much into the narrative where, you know, 5 years on the sidelines compared to getting absolutely pummeled for the better part of 5 years might actually be an advantage. And that's why I landed on Nick Diaz. But, man, there are a lot of reasons why that could maybe be a bad idea, too. I think there's line value there, and he's going to be super popular. So you better bank that he gets it done. I don't know if Diaz, you know, because I mentioned the kind of screwing around against the Silva fight. I don't know if he's going to be focused on putting up enough volume, you know, over the course of this many rounds to be able to take a decision. And both of these guys are really tough to get out of here. So with Diaz, you kind of got to bank on the knockout a little bit. If it goes 15 minutes, I think Lawler will probably out volume him, but I don't have any confidence in Robbie Lawler after what I've seen of late necessarily. And like I said, it's 5 years on the sidelines. You know, he's in good shape. They're triathletes versus 5 years of getting pummeled. So that's how I negate the experience factor and land on Diaz. But, man, this is a really tough one to get to.
Yeah, the last thing you said was something I wanted to bring up. There's never been a fight where either Diaz brothers showed up and they weren't in shape. You know, you can say what you want. They don't, you know, obviously, neither is getting out of bed unless it's a massive paycheck. We know how much they hate dealing with the media obligations and all that crap. Mm-hmm. But they both love training. You know, they both stay in terrific shape, and they're both tough as hell. Like, there's no way Nick Diaz is going to show up Saturday not ready to fight. Like, I'm 100% confident in that. He's not going to show up looking like a slob, you know, barely make weight and just, you know, get run. Like, that's the least of my concerns. Mm-hmm. You know, he will be in good shape.
Mm-hmm. Also, for what it's worth, Nick Diaz, even after all that time off, is the younger fighter by, you know, like a year. So, you know, take with
I don't
that.
Know. I have a problem getting past all the damage Lawler's taken. Mm-hmm. He looks like a different guy. You mentioned McDonald too. I mean, Rory McDonald was like viewed as like a future heavyweight champion and like one of the best prospects in the world. And I mean, now he's like dropping fights in PFL to guys most people never heard of.
Yeah, Lawler took his soul in that fight.
They both did. They were. Look at the pictures of both of them when it's over. Like neither guy is the same.
Yeah, I mean, Lawler had his lip cut all the way up to his nose. McDonald's nose was never the same ever again. He broke his nose in every fight.
I mean, and Rory's like not. I'm gonna look it up so I don't get it wrong. Like he's not that old. Like Rory's how old is Rory? Rory is, God, he's only 32. He was born in 89. You know, he's not old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so you know, we talk about MMA miles, and again, that's. So in summary, I'll say this one more time. You decide whether getting beat for 5 years and getting the reps is more important or saving your body is more important. You know, after rewatching some of Lawler's fights, I think that Diaz is probably better off taking that break here. And of course, he'll be here in shape. But, you know, we've hit that a ton. I think that's going to be the fan favorite fight. It does a lot for the casual fan, the nostalgic fan especially. But let's keep this thing moving here. Heavyweight matchup, Curtis Blaydes, Jair Rozenstruik. Blaydes 9,200, Rozenstruik 7,000. Blaydes minus 320 favorite, Rozenstruik plus 250 is the comeback. Odds to finish, minus 200. Outside of Shevchenko, that's the best on the main card here. You probably want this fight in some way, shape, or form. Now, in my experience, I'll go first on this one. In my experience, watching Curtis Blaydes, he coming off losses, you know, to Ngannou and the Ngannou twice, he's bounced back pretty in a pretty good way to each of his losses. He's bounced back with four fight winning streaks. He's probably coming out here with a vengeance. 30 years old. I remember back when we were still doing that now defunct Dynasty League, Blaydes was a big pick in that because he's always a high scorer and he's also very good. And we kind of assume, you know, if it weren't for Ngannou, there's no doubt in my mind he would probably be champion right now, one way or another. But time to take a step back after losing to Derek Lewis in spectacular fashion. And, you know, Lewis went on to get the title shot after that. Now we kind of take a step back. He faces another big power puncher in Jair Rozenstruik. And at 7,000 on DraftKings, if you're looking to hit that home run and you put your eggs in that one punch knockout basket, I mean, let's face it, you're going to have to throw some things in your lineup that you don't think with your heart of hearts is going to happen. And you just need to play the numbers and hope the right combination of these guys strike. Could Rozenstruik get him? Yeah, he absolutely could. But again, that's getting married to one outcome. And I think Blaydes is the better fighter in just about all facets of the game. I think Blaydes is going to have learned his lesson standing around and banging with Derek Lewis and getting caught. And he's going to go right back straight to his wrestling games. He knows Dana White doesn't like it. He knows the fans don't like it. But it's going to win him fights, and it's actually going to be pretty good DraftKings-wise, getting up that control time and those takedowns. So the pick here is Blaydes. I don't know. Is there any bit to that analysis I'm missing?
Not really. I think this is a disastrous matchup for Jair Rozenstruik. I think it's bad. Curtis Blaydes probably would have fought for a UFC title if he wasn't knocked out by Derek Lewis in February. In many aspects, Jair winning this fight is going to have to be similar to what Lewis did. He's going to have to catch him. But there's such an overwhelming athleticism advantage in Blaydes' favor. The guy's probably the best wrestler in the heavyweight division. And I know Jair defends the takedown so far at about an 80% clip, which is really good, obviously. But defending takedowns from Curtis Blaydes is not the same as whoever, you know, was coming before him.
Yeah. Rozenstruik's been taken down twice by Alistair Overeem, twice by Ciryl Gane, and twice, this is way back, but twice by Junior Albini. So, again, those guys compared to the takedown of Blaydes.
Right. Curtis Blaydes is next level compared to those guys as far as wrestling. Look, Rozenstruik is a one-dimensional brawler with zero footwork, and, you know, it sounds crazy. You know, I think he'd be much better suited in a fight against someone like Lewis, where he, you know what you're going to get. And at that point, you just have to hope that you land before he does and that your chin holds up. I expect Curtis Blaydes to just ground him into dust. Yeah. Like, I expect like an early takedown in each round, and I expect him to just grind on him for, you know, the better part of 15 minutes and him to win a 30-27 decision easily. Like, this doesn't do anything for me. I think this is like really straightforward.
Yeah, you got me fixated. Now I'm thinking, why haven't Jair and Derek Lewis fought yet? And maybe after Curtis Blaydes takes care of business here, then suddenly it'll be time to make the Lewis fight. Lewis still has fights on his contract.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give Jair credit. He's been better. I mean, he's 6-2 in the UFC. Seven of those eight fights have ended via knockout. So, you know, he's kind of all or nothing. And he's been better than I thought he would. You know, a guy like that who's just so one-dimensional, it's, especially if you're a heavyweight, God, if you're a one-dimensional power puncher and your chin doesn't hold up, you're done. That's it. And he's been, you know, he's held up. You know, there have been very few times where he's been severely damaged on the feet, like at least with like one shot, like it takes, you know, many. But this is, look, Curtis Blaydes would have beat Derek Lewis if Lewis didn't knock him out. You know, well, obviously, but you know what I mean? If it wasn't like a one, you know, if it wasn't like a one, Curtis Blaydes would have destroyed Lewis as far as like overall, you know, all around MMA game and stuff. It seems like a really, really bad matchup for Jair. A guy who makes him move his feet and do something other than box is like a worst case scenario for a guy like that.
Yeah. And okay. So the whole, you know, to bring this full circle, I want to touch on Valentina Shevchenko being 9,500. If you pass up on using her and can maybe use Blaydes and Fiorro instead, you know, you're spreading yourself out a little bit more and you're opening yourself up to high scores. I mean, granted, this is a 5-round fight, but Blaydes had 172 DraftKings points against Alexander Volkov, all the control time, all the takedowns. Now we go back to some 3-round fights, 82 against Dos Santos, 120 against Abdurakhimov, you know, 105 against Willis. He can definitely get you the 10x for cash games, and maybe those ground and pound, those elbows, you know, will get to, you know, Jair Rosenstruik by the end if, you know, because nobody wants to have Blaydes on top of you and mount for any amount of time, period. So maybe you can get a finish there in the end after racking up takedowns and control time and turn it into a pretty good score. So I like him as a DraftKings play. I think the exposure should be pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's where his DraftKings scoring comes from. You know, he gets on top of you. He just throws a bunch of elbows and destroys you from top position. And, you know, we haven't seen a ton of Jair Rosenstruik on the ground. I don't think he has a ton offensively. But from a DraftKings standpoint, you're kind of just wondering what he can do defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, how long he, another situation of like, I think it's kind of like a little like the Lauren Murphy and Shevchenko in the sense that it kind of comes down to how long they hold up. You know, like, which, you know, Valentina's dominance is probably going to come on the feet. Blaydes is probably going to come from top position. And then it's just how long can the opponent last?
Yep.
Like you said, the difference being that if she does last with Valentina, you have the potential for two extra rounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that's a very good point as well. So yeah, I'm glad you reeled me back there, because the two rounds does make a big difference. You know, Blaydes isn't scoring 170 in a 3-round fight. Nope. You know, he the only thing that allowed him to do that was it being a 5-round fight. So fair enough.
Part of it.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about one more women's fight on the pay-per-view card. Jessica Andrade, Cynthia Calvillo. Andrade 9,000, Calvillo 7,200. Again, big disparity among a lot of these that we're going to discuss on the pay-per-view card here. Andrade is a -275 betting favorite. Calvillo comeback is +220. Odds to finish -120. So I think Vegas thinks Andrade is gonna get this finished here. It's another $9,000 price tag to pay here. How confident are you in paying that for Andrade?
I'm pretty confident in paying it. I'm not as confident she's gonna get the finish, but I think there's like we talked about from the majority of the fights on this main card. There's a gap in just talent and ability between the two fighters. Cynthia Calvillo fought Caitlin Chookagian last December and was routed on the scorecards. She was a -170 favorite for that fight, which now looks just mind-numbing, you know, looking back on it. Caitlin Chookagian has no ground game and no power. It's just straight-up kickboxing volume. And she still managed to overwhelm Cynthia Calvillo on the feet. It was highly, highly concerning, to say the least. I was surprised by it, quite frankly, how bad she looked. Jessica Andrade has lost 3 of 4. It's not as bad. You know, it's obviously never good. It's not as bad a record as the number states when you dig a little deeper. Mm-hmm. You know, she was knocked out by Shevchenko in April. Okay, no big deal. She lost to Rose Namajunas. She lost to, you know, Zhang Weili. So, you know, look, those three losses have all come against either former or current UFC champions.
And across different weight classes, we should know. Right. So Zhang Weili and Rose were both, of course, at 115 pounds, which led her to say, okay, I need to move up to flyweight. She needed, again, in flyweight division, you're always one win away from a title shot. Right.
They had no options. Yeah. She
beat Chookagian and then lost to Shevchenko. And now she's kind of back to the drawing board, has to put a few more wins together. And, you know, I'm with you. I think she can probably roll through Calvillo here.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, look, I'm not particularly impressed with Cynthia Calvillo. Her defense is lacking. She's not explosive from an offensive standpoint. you know, it's different weight classes, but like the scouting report is kind of like Lauren Murphy. Like she kind of gets by on like grit and toughness. There's like no dynamic offensive skill. There's no high level athleticism. She's tough and Murphy's tough. And that's pretty much what she's trying to get by with. I do have concerns about Andrade's chin. You know, I don't think it's going to be a problem here.
I don't think it's a problem at flyweight necessarily. I mean, that happens to everybody against Shevchenko. And then, you know, the strawweight, I think you have some of the issues with the big, with a really bad weight cut.
Yeah,
I mean, when she started, she was a bantamweight, right? And there was no flyweight division. So for her to move down, she really hurts herself to make 115. And that's not good on the chin.
No, it's not. And quite frankly, she never really. She was like a mediocre, like 500 fighter till she dropped down. And you see how muscular she is, and nobody ever thought that she'd really be able to make 115 pounds with any kind of consistency. And, you know, now she's, you know, she's now she's fighting at 125. So, and look, I mean, then you're talking about, you know, the level of competition that she faced. Look, I mean, you know, if you're getting knocked out by Shevchenko, you know, it is what it is. Just because you're getting knocked out by her kind of has no bearing on whether you think she's going to get knocked out by Cynthia Calvillo. You know, there's a massive difference. There's just a difference in talent. You know, I don't, this is another one. It's pretty straightforward. I don't see really any value in Calvillo as an underdog. You know, I don't see how she's going to generate consistent offense. You know, she can't match Andrade's technical skill. And I think if they end up along the fence or they end up in a clinch or anything like that, I'm pretty sure Andrade is going to be able to out-muscle her without issue. So this is another pretty clear-cut one.
Yep, that's exactly what you said in the article, and I have to agree with you 100%. Everything about Andrade, when she's a favorite, I mean, obviously when she's an underdog and probably going to lose to someone like Shevchenko, this doesn't apply. But against any, whenever she faces anyone that's outside of that elite tier of the division, she's a volume machine and a scoring machine. I mean, 6.15 significant strikes landed per minute, just under 3 takedowns average per 15 minutes. So a takedown and 30 significant strikes around is what you're getting from her on average here. So she's a high scorer. It's just so tough because these underdogs, I don't like so many of them. We'll get into that in a second. I don't like a ton of them. And
no, there's not many.
You're picking what low 7,000 range fighter is going to maybe hang around to get 20 points or so from striking to try to finish your lineup, at least in cash. And I mean, I don't think Calvillo really, I don't give her much of a chance in this fight. I just think she's going to get overwhelmed. And so I can't play. And I don't think she's going to get off enough volume in Andrade before she gets overwhelmed. So I can't really advocate her in the underdogs area either. And it gets to be really difficult for me. I do want to hit on underdogs with you in one second, but I want to mention a couple other notes on this card here. Maybe we can talk about these fights if you have any particular inclination here. But watch out for Dan Hooker and Nasrat Haqparast. On paper, that's an awesome fight. Dan Hooker had some visa issues. I think he got them resolved, and he's going to get to Vegas like just on Thursday, and then he's got to weigh in Friday morning, so that's going to be tough. But we found out last night Haqparast had the same thing. He's got visa issues too, and he needs to get a last-minute approval in order to be able to get to the United States for this fight here. God,
didn't Dan Hooker tweet somebody or something to get like an appointment?
Dan Hooker tweeted his embassy. Somehow
I knew,
people talk to people. MMA Twitter did its thing. They got Dan Hooker in. Haqparast, a week later, found himself in the exact same situation. So you know what he did? He tweeted his embassy last night, and all the MMA Twitters were doing it. You know, why not? Why not give it a shot? You got to get to the country one way or another. All I'm saying is for this, you know, I like Hooker in this fight if it happens, but watch these guys at the weigh-ins because it might not be good. Imagine you're flying on a plane for most of Thursday, you know, because you're doing international flights. You get down, you sit in the sauna for as long as you can, and then you got to wake up and weigh in Friday morning. That has to be miserable. I think it was Ariel Helwani or someone on Twitter suggested, why not just let him have a catchweight fight, right? Because they're the same weight, obviously. The matchup was made. You know, why make these guys both kill themselves in 24 hours? Just let them fight. But anyway, the UFC is obviously not going to do that, so you have to think about that. So I wanted to mention that, and I also wanted to mention, you know, he'd be higher on any other card, but Merab Dvalishvili is a DraftKings scoring machine. He's got a tougher mat, definitely a step up against Marlon Moraes, but he's like, you know, Blades, he's a takedown machine, chain wrestling, you know, gets off a ton of volume, exceptional cardio. He's someone that I just wanted to note. But again, he finds himself at what I believe is 8,900 on DraftKings. So these things get really difficult really fast.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing is hard because the three fight, there's, so if you take away the main event, you have Lawler and Diaz, which we both admit no one has any idea what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So then you have the other three fights on the main card with, you know, Murphy, Jair, and Calvillo. And I don't think either of us have any interest in any of those three from a DraftKings standpoint.
From the underdogs, in the underdogs,
right, at least. Right, yeah. Right. So then you're trying to find something elsewhere. Marlon Moraes has looked pretty bad, man. Oof. And, you know, there was a time where he was probably one of, if not the best fighter, not in the UFC.
Title contender, too.
It's gone bad real fast. And yep. Merab Dvalishvili is probably one of the top five wrestlers in the sport. I mean, it's like him, like Blades, if you want to go heavyweight, like Islam Makhachev with like Khabib retired. Like Dvalishvili is like right up there. And like there are still concerns about what he's going to do when he has to do something other than try and take a guy down for 15 minutes. But man, if he's racking up 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 takedowns a fight, man, and he's one of those guys that you might, if he fails on the first two or three or four, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 are coming. And we talk about that all the time. Some guys fail early on and they just get away with it, get away from it the rest of the fight. Not him. He knows where his bread is buttered, and he, you know, he'll keep coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 5-2, 13-12, 5-5, 6-11 are his takedowns. The guy who defended him best was John Dotson, surprisingly, and his average over that whole run is 111 fantasy points per fight. He's always just a guy that with all of these guys on the and girls on the main event that are in this higher price tier, Dvalishvili is so often overlooked on DraftKings. So just
ridiculous.
Don't be the person that overlooks him and completely leaves him out of your lineup, because we like Andrash. We like Blades. You know, we like, obviously, Shevchenko. Just don't overlook Dvalishvili and make sure you mix him in there as well, because he's got as high of a scoring ceiling as just about any of those.
I mean, for those who don't know, like, his wrestling is like the equivalent of like how good it is of like Francis Ngannou's power. Yep. Like, as far as like the highest, you know, like how high a level you're talking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you go down to some of the, you know, the fights on like the undercard, it's tough, man. There's not a whole heck of a lot going on. I guess the one that stood out a little bit was Nick Maximoff against Carl Roberson, and Roberson 8,200, Maximoff is 8,000. And the only reason I went with that one as an obvious one is because I don't think Carl Roberson's very good. You know, he was tapped by, you know, Brendan Allen in his last fight. I don't think there's a ton there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he lost to Marvin Vettori. You know, Marvin Vettori is good. So, you know, that is what it is, but he's up and down. He hasn't beaten great competition. He's generally struggled when he's faced guys who are better. And, that was just one. There's not, you know, I don't have any. You look at some of the other underdogs on the underdogs on the undercard, and you know, like I have no interest in like Roxanne Modafferi, very little interest in Shamil Abdurakhimov. Like, there's not a ton there. You know, if you're worried that Moraes can't defend the takedown, then he's done. You know, you can't use him, and it's a mess.
Yeah, Jalen Turner maybe snuck up on me a little bit. I know the Suros Medic guy is no joke here, and you know, a lot of times you're scared going up against you know, some of these crazy some of these strikers or wrestlers from that region of the world, if you will. Here, actually, I don't even know where Suros Medic is from. I don't want to misspeak here, but you know, oh, he's from Alaska. Jeez, never mind. Here, I thought with the name, but he's only 7-0 as a pro fighter, and he comes in as the favorite with only a contender series fight and one knockout win at UFC 259. And Jalen Turner's put together back to back wins. He lost to the Steamroller Frivola, lost to Vicente Luque. There's no shame in that. Jalen Turner's got some power here. You know, 155. He got a submission win against Brock Reaver, TKO. A couple of TKOs. Actually, a lot of. 8 of his 10 wins are by TKO, and he's only 7,800 on this card. He's 26 years old. I mean, you're telling me that this Medic guy, you know, is going to, with only 7 pro fights, is going to come in there and roll over him? I don't know about that necessarily. Do you know something about Medic? I don't know.
So here's what I know about this fight, and it's actually one of the reasons I kind of find it fascinating. These might be the two tallest lightweights on the UFC roster. Turner is 6'3", and Medic is 6'1".
It's almost like James Vick back in the day.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, I can't imagine Medich. I mean, he may never have faced, I'm sure he's never faced someone. He's probably never faced someone as tall as he is. Mm-hmm. And Turner, I mean, obviously, he's certainly never faced a lightweight as tall as he is. But I wonder if he's even faced anyone as close, you know, within a couple inches. Yep.
And I just want to throw out there, 6-inch reach advantage for Jalen Turner. So, again, you know, we're grasping at straws here a little bit. But if there is an underdog that I think's got a decent shot, and, you know, maybe other people are going to be in the same line of thinking and he'll end up with super high ownership. But if there's anybody that I'm going to throw out there, it's probably him as one of them. I'm probably throwing out him. Maybe I'll take Nick Diaz. I don't like taking Nick Diaz because of how popular he's going to be. So maybe, you know, I take your guy and I take Maximov. I take Maximov. I take Turner. And then maybe I punt somebody. And instead of taking Shevchenko, take a couple other highly rostered people. That's really, I don't know. That's how I'm viewing this card here.
Yeah, this is for what is a deep card as far as, like, you know, you looked at the, you know, little cards the last couple weeks, like there are probably 7 or 8 fights on this card that probably could have been the co-main event on from last mm-hmm. week. And as deep as the card is and like well-known names and stuff, this one's kind of a mess. Like every time we talk, there's always, you know, 2 or 3, we look at the undercard and you say, oh, well, you know, that guy's kind of interesting. This one's kind of like a disaster. Like even the one you talked about, like you're talking yourself into Turner because there's no other options.
I'm hearing you. So, okay, let's play one last game here. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit before we wrap up here. Say you're doing a 3-strike survivor pool here. I think we can both agree that Shevchenko is your layup. You got to pick 2 fighters on the card to win. That's all. So in your confidence pool, who would go 2 and 3 in this one?
See, like on straight confidence, Blades would be second.
Yep.
Then you got to worry about the knockout.
Yep. I was gonna go Blades too, though. I would have put Blades too, and then I'm thinking,
I don't know, maybe Manon's the third.
Yeah, yep, she's good. I mean, Semmelsberger is a -520 favorite. I'm sorry,
you know who would probably be the third? Talia Santos would probably be the third.
Roxanne Modafari, isn't she due for a win though with her regular pattern? I mean, I know that's garbage for analysis, right? But I mean,
there are like 3 or 4 women who I know forever. Jessica Penne was another. They were like a 10 to 12 fights deep where all they did was alternate wins and losses.
Yeah. So Modafari is 10 fights deep.
She is due for a victory. Yes.
She is due for a victory, but Tyler Santos has back-to-back wins over Molly McCann, who she just got back on track a couple weeks back, and Jillian Robertson, who I definitely have some respect for. She's only had 3 UFC fights, though, and Modafferi's seen it all. I guess Modafferi's in the done picking.
39 years old by Saturday.
Yeah,
her birthday. Yeah.
September 24th.
Friday. Yeah. Her birthday is Friday.
Mm-hmm.
God, and she's like Roxanne Mod, and like, God, I love, like, she's like one of the true, like, original pioneers of women's MMA. She's the nicest person in the world. You'll never ever hear anyone say a bad word about her. And the crazy thing is, she's upwards of mid 40s total fights, 43, somewhere around there. She has knocked out once, which, God, that's
she'll
crazy.
Always hang around. She'll always
she's awesome. Hang around. I don't think she's going to win, but, you know, no, she's still awesome.
I don't know. So, but I wouldn't completely fade her if you're making 20 or more lineups. I mean, you're going to have to mix up your dogs a little bit and account for some outcomes. I don't think she's a scratch off completely.
No, I mean, we always say the people that win, you know, the big GPPs and stuff, the lineup that wins is almost always going to look ugly on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's even more. Yeah. I think it's even more true in this one than usual. It's going to be.
If you leave $1,000 in salary on the table for this card, your lineup's going to look horrific. But I don't know if you're mass entering. The only fighter I'm actually like excluding entirely is probably Lauren Murphy here. Now, of course, Shevchenko could take a wrong step, blow her knee out, and ruin that. So that is a risky play, fading somebody entirely, but that's probably not many more than 1 or 2 Calvillos. And that's about it. I mean, yeah, it's an ugly card. So hopefully today, John and I, we gave you some things to think about if you're listening to this on the podcast. We got some good breakdowns into the main cards, threw out a couple of underdog options here. We got a lot going on here. I want to say again that Fight IQ is coming at you on Friday night after weigh-ins. They go from the bottom up and go through their round table and offer their opinions on DFS and bets and hot takes. They do all that too. So, you know, we'll know a little bit more after weigh-ins, see who misses, who looks good, who doesn't, that kind of thing. Hopefully we got you a good early look, a good preview. Check out John's write-ups on the site if you miss those. So the DraftKings preview went up today. Tomorrow and the day after, we're going to have bets from Cole and Chris up on the site. I'll post picks on Thursday morning. You know, Drake does a bottom-to-top preview. And, of course, Chris looks at five DFS sites in his column. So we got a ton of UFC 266 content coming your way. Thanks for listening. Thanks for helping us kick the RotoWire MMA YouTube channel off the ground here. You know, I'll say it again for John Littering here. You can follow him on Twitter at JonLitterine. You can follow me at RotoJake. Any last words for the crowd, John?
No. Be creative.
Be creative. Yes, that is great. That is excellent advice for any DFS situation, especially a variant sport like MMA, where you got to get tricky in those GPPs. All right, well, John, take it easy. We're going to be back with you guys prior to UFC 267. That's October 30th. We got Jan Blachowicz, Glover Teixeira. I believe that one's being planned on as a free broadcast, so a lot more eyes on there. Hopefully we can help you out. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today.
Thank you.